Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryan!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Dueling Tangents on Devils Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM Madison. We're also on the Shaw 101 FM and Waukesha 540 AM, Full Falls Radio 98.9 FM and WXCO 1230 AM Wausau, and locally grown radio 97.5 FM, WFHR 1320 AM Wisconsin Rapids. If that voice sounds a little bit different to you, it should, because I am neither
man?
Luke nor Brian.
Who is this man?
I am William, and I'm a very nice man, allegedly. Those are Evan's words,
very
not
nice man.
Mine. So you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and William and also sometimes Evan.
It's a party.
we're having a party today on Friday. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful day. A little bit chilly for my taste, but, you know, it's Wisconsin. What are you going to expect? What's on your mind today, Ev?
Oh, come on now. Come on now, man. I got work to do.
Hey, we all got work to do.
No.
Just because it's Friday doesn't mean the week's over yet, right?
Is it really?
It is already Friday.
You're helping me out, William. You're helping me already. You know, it's nice to have you here in town.
You know, I appreciate that. It's not a terrible drive for me, and Madison's a lovely community. So being able to get out here, spend some time with the crew, I can't complain.
Well, you could, but who would listen?
Yeah, nobody cares, right? Everybody's got something to complain about. Nobody cares. So, you know, I want to get something I want to touch on real quick for you, Ev, is I listened to yesterday's show. It was excellent. Brian was talking about fear, right? If you weren't able to catch this, hit us up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. And he was talking about how kind of the public has become almost paralyzed by fear and paranoia, right? And how it's kind of caused society to critically change the way that we interact amongst one another. One thing, I think Brian did an excellent job of talking about the what, right?
Yeah.
The what being fear has taken over our lives. We're being manipulated to kind of continue on in this lifestyle that the powers that be want us to continue on with. But I think that something that was so close to being touched on but not really covered is the why, right?
Sure.
Why does everybody want to keep the population kind of naive, scared, confused? And I think throughout history, we've kind of seen that confused, scared, naive people are just so much easier to control, right? It's all about manipulation and tactical control, top to bottom. If you keep the average working class people fighting amongst each other over whatever marginally small difference it might be, they're never going to turn around and realize, like, hey, wait a minute, that guy's been picking my pockets this entire time.
That's
I never even noticed.
The crazy part, right? In this workaday life that we have today, you literally don't have time. You don't have time to address this stuff. You literally cannot take that one day off work to go vote in some cases. Some people are that up against the wall. And when Brian was discussing fear in this way, you know, he tied it pretty directly, for example, to January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
How did so many people get so worked up so as to travel thousands of miles in some case?
The media apparatus. You look at, I'll use the obvious example of being the Murdoch Empire, Fox News, right? It's almost like a daily dose of Scarecrow's fear toxin, right?
Yeah.
Just being
yeah.
pumped directly into these people's eyeballs.
24/7, you know, breaking news chyrons about murders and break-ins and riots and fires. Yes.
Well, they quite literally see a world that doesn't exist, right? These people in these upper middle class suburban communities are talking about crime, crime, crime. You know, it's the entire Johnson ad campaign, frankly, and kind of Tim Michaels too, is you know, the Democrats can't keep you safe. We're the only ones who can keep you safe,
with a dash of dog whistle in there. You know,
you have to throw in the dog whistle,
is
right?
Different.
But if they keep you scared that the crime's going to come to my community, go look outside, dude. None of these people see any of this crime. There's a referendum in Washington County where I live, right?
Mm-hmm.
They want to increase the budget for police funding, and so many conservatives that I've talked to have no interest in that in any way, shape, or form. They're like, no, dude, my property taxes are high enough. I don't want to increase my taxes for that. But then if you were to mention something like, you know, wow, so you're saying that public safety is not paramount to you? They're like, no, I feel plenty safe in my community.
That's that dash of dog whistle,
it's that
right?
Other
it's
communities
not,
aren't
it's not
safe.
Us.
Yeah.
I just happen to be so concerned about them, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's shocking how embedded it's gotten. I don't know if you remember yesterday, we had a really lovely caller. We had Joe join us. Mm-hmm. And she pushed back a little bit on sort of on the impetus for why January 6th happened the way that it did. And I do happen to think that fear has a big part of it, right? Where's that motivation come from? Because it is a matter of motivation.
Yeah. Oh,
how
yeah.
You get people to get out of their seats, to take those days off of work, to spend that gas money, to do something so insane. And fear is one of the best motivators there is.
And I think there's a science behind that, too, right? You look at the analogy of the scared animal, right? The trapped, there's a creature trapped in the corner. It has nowhere else to go, nowhere else to turn. No longer thinks rationally. Fight or flight kicks in. It might lunge at you. It might bite you. It might attack. It's going to do whatever it can to survive. Deep down, you know, we still kind of got that lizard brain functioning behind the prefrontal cortex that might not be as logical and rational as our critical thinking brethren may be. So,
and that's that meta society that you addressed before. You know, with the Fox News empire, this how we've got society at large so knotted up, because on the community level, even the guy with Trump flags outside his house, when you live next door to him and there's a torrential snowstorm, you're helping each other shovel each other's driveways.
Yeah,
you know, on that on the microcosm, things are still fairly cohesive, at least to my experience. It's that when you really, really zoom out and you're using Facebook and Twitter and, you know, television reporting to sort of set the pulse, that things get really, really dangerous.
And a lot of it is still just tribalism, right? It's us versus them. When it's your next door neighbor, you have something in common. We live on the same street. You hear so many times somebody thinks like, they, you know, that person, they're a liberal, but they're different because I know them. They're okay.
Bingo.
They're cool.
Some of the most racist people that I know,
yeah,
you know, work with illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. And they're not the problem. They're cool.
Or they're one of the good ones. I hear that all the time. It's so incredibly frustrating.
Oh,
it's like, you need to get outside the tiny bubble that you live in and meet some more people, because the small town community you grew up in, there's a much bigger world out
there.
True. And I think you see that a lot with like college in particular, right? You see children, maybe they grow up, their parents are a little bit, we'll say it, the parents are racist or stereotypical or whatever, and they live in this predominantly white community. They've never met anybody outside of their little ecosystem, and then the children go off to college. They have new experiences. They meet new people. They realize that the world's not as closed off as they were taught growing up in these small town communities. They come home. They share these ideas with their parents. And all of a sudden, the parents are like, college indoctrinated my baby girl into thinking that all people deserve equal rights. And
CRT.
Like, CRT. They're teaching them CRT. That's a great concept to bring up with the fear tactics, right? Like, nobody can even name what that is. Like, what's CRT? Well, I don't know, but they're teaching it to my kids and I don't want that.
It's pretty ridiculous. And you touched on something really, really important just now. And as to why are we suddenly an enemy to education? Why is this such a problem? Why are we banning books? Why are we calling teachers groomers? All this stuff. It's because school isn't just about teaching you history or math, right? It's about integration.
Teaching you how to survive in a public setting.
It's about
we're part of a community,
people.
Being
that's
a part
right.
of the society around you.
And that's a serious problem for folks that want to control the population at large.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, because if you teach someone to critically think or somebody to work together, the most basic necessity of a functioning society is you have to be able to work together amongst each other towards a common goal. That makes it significantly harder for whoever's on the top of the pyramid to kind of dictate what that common goal may or may not be.
Yeah, it makes it harder to gaslight people. When people have confidence in their reality, right? When they open their eyes and look around and really feel like they have an idea of what's happening, that they understand the world that they live in, it's a lot harder to manipulate and mislead them.
You know, you want to talk about manipulation, misleading. You guys touched on it a little bit yesterday too, but let me get you a quote from one Mr. Senator Ron Johnson.
Oh,
I had virtually, you can't, I had no involvement, Johnson stuttered. I received either three texts and I sent two texts back or the other way around. My involvement, you know, my lack of involvement was seconds worth of texting.
It's so, he says that a few times though.
Multiple times.
Did I or didn't I? It's something else.
The counter, of course, was, but that's still involvement. You know, he's telling you to your face, No, I wasn't involved. It was nothing. All I did was a couple of texts. As if you're not going to put two and two together and realize, like, well, sending a couple of texts does still mean you're doing something, right? And then when he gets called on it, the quote was, I believe, but you, the quote was, I talked to my chief of staff and he took care of it. I didn't know what it was and there was somebody that could help arrange delivery.
Oh, it's wild stuff, man. Honestly, I think one of the most successful, I'm not even going to call it attack ads against Rojo, just one of the most successful campaigns that we could run right now is just a minute straight of his nervous stammering.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
It's really something.
The gaslighting is just such a perfect terminology for it, because I'll bring up another person that I was reading a beautiful gaslighting quote from them. One Mr. Brett Favre, who was obviously involved in a very scandalous behavior down in Mississippi lately.
You want to talk about welfare queens.
Right? One of the wealthiest athletes in the country, and he's stealing from the poorest people in the poorest state in the union. You know, a proud Mississippi resident like Brett Favre would never do something like that. But the quote from Favre, it's just astounding, the hypocrisy from some of y'all. I mean, heck, do you support Title IX or not? Now my daughter's being persecuted from having a state-of-the-art volleyball facility because her dad worked for a living. Oof. Talk about gaslighting, dude. Yeah. Like, what?
You mean now your daughter has a state-of-the-art volleyball stadium because the state of Mississippi paid you millions of dollars and built it?
Mm-hmm. He went on to say,
money.
I don't know much about welfare. All I know is that we'll fare a lot better as a society once we get back to a little thing I call accountability instead of trying to take away my constitution. You know he thought he was clever. Like, that
I
was
don't
like
even
the,
think he wrote that. Let's be clear. There's not a chance that he wrote that himself.
Yeah, I mean, Brett Favre, you
yeah, I know.
He added, this is all off the record, by the way, right after the fact, as if that somehow like negates what he had just said.
Oh, what a douche.
Yeah. I don't know what it is with Packers quarterbacks. Great players, but man, just questionable human beings. We need to get Benkert back here. Follow him on Twitch.
Let's do it,
fun
buddy.
Guy. All right. We're going to head back to commercial break, but we'll be right back after that. We got a great show lined up for you. I got a little special guest. I teased it a few days ago, but you're going to want to hear this. You're going to want to see this. And Section 2 coming up right after the break. We'll see you soon.
I virtually, you can't, I mean, my lack of involvement was seconds worth of texting.
Welcome back to Devil's Radio. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and sometimes William and occasionally Evan. If you're feeling like giving us a call, why don't you reach out to the station, 844-967-2789. We got a caller on the line right now, Evan. How are you doing today, Joe?
Good. I'm glad to hear this discussion. I just wanted to chime in a little bit on two things. Ron Johnson, but second, this issue about fear and how that may have motivated the people on January 6th. I'm going to push again on this, and I'm just going to offer some thoughts on this. Would it be fear, not so much for me, but more for many of these people, I think, that it's tribal. You had mentioned that word, and I think it's very, very important. This is their tribe. They had been told by their leader, go to Washington, do this. And this was a chance to really participate in a hero story, I think.
We're talking about disadvantaged people, right, that maybe haven't had the most cohesive communities in their lives, suddenly have this accepting group with a quote-unquote mission. And
that's a great way to put it.
Extremely powerful.
You know, in the past, extremist ideas were kind of ostracized, right? But now all these people found like-minded individuals. The internet let them unite, if you will.
Yeah, people would say he hates the people I hate. I mean, that's really it. And he's opened up this kind of a very sad current in people where they had a chance to be somebody, a hero story. They got to storm the Capitol to such a good degree that these people were fighting cops, which it is so I can't believe in ordinary circumstances living their lives that this would be something that they would ever tolerate, but they so embraced the story that they were willing to be, you know, beating cops up with American flags, willing to be shooting bear spray in the eyes of cops. It's really remarkable that this push to have to be part of a hero story, and I think it's that more than it is fear that motivated these people to do this. And then so that was one thing I wanted to mention. The other thing I wanted to mention was about Sean Riley, who I believe was the person who was Johnson's chief of staff.
That's right,
Senator Johnson said this was going on. It's useful to remember that he had been part of Ron Johnson's staff, and then he left for 1 year of work at the White House under Trump, and then came back to Johnson's staff. And I think that that is important. Why would you leave the White House? That's the glory position. Yes, he took a job with Johnson. Did Johnson pay him that much more or give him that much of a bigger, well, chief of staff, I suppose. But nonetheless, you don't usually leave the White House and then you know what I mean? That's a glory
turnover at Trump's White House was astronomical, especially compared to previous administrations. I think a lot of people might have recognized, like, hey, I don't want to be on this ship when it inevitably sinks, right? Better get out early than be there when it goes down.
But there's a tie there. They're able to call Sean then and say, here you go. Here's your part in the play. You say that we have something that we want delivered to the vice president. You are the link between the White House and Trump's White House and Senator Johnson. I think there's a lot more that needs to be unpeeled in that particular story. But anyway, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit more, and I'm anxious to listen to the rest of the show.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Oh, it's always great to hear from you, Joe. If you got any more calls or questions or concerns, don't hesitate to reach out, 844-967-2789. We have Mark on the line right now. Mark, how you doing today? What's up?
Doing okay. And it's interesting you're talking about a little bit earlier about the freak out they're having over critical race theory and all this. We don't want our children exposed to that kind of thinking. Well, for God's sakes, I mean, that it's nothing new for people to actually, for Americans to be thinking, make complex thought. I mean, I guess it is a challenge for some of these conservatives, but they forget that at the time of our founding of our country, I mean, there was people that were debating the evils of slavery even back then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both in the Declaration of Independence and at the Constitutional Convention, I mean, there was one of the members there was coming right out and saying that how dare we snatch people away from their beloved family from Africa and haul them, to subject them to bondage and as our slaves here. I mean, that people were thinking about it back then, at the equality of man. I mean, that our founders were exposed to a great many ideas that many people now have. I mean, they're classical civilization. I mean, grammar school used to mean Latin grammar, not, English grammar. I mean, that's what they referred to original meaning of grammar schools.
That kind of reminds me.
As far as I understand.
Have you ever heard the story, Mark, of there was a survey ran where they asked a bunch of Americans if they believe Arabic numerals should be taught in school, which is essentially, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And like 60%, maybe 55% or something of the population said, no, because the phrase Arabic scared them into thinking, oh, I don't want my kids to learn that.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I was just seeing something that I guess up until like the 14th century, 13th or 14th century, I mean, the Arabic numerals were considered suspect because they were considered to be magical or have some kind of evil connotation, just basic numerology numbers. It's idiotic. These people do not understand history at all. There's a book that I found, an old book that I found, probably published in like the 30s. It's called Our Oriental Heritage. For Western civilization, it didn't mean the Far East necessarily. It meant, or at that point in time, it meant the Near East. I mean, that there's parts of Africa, Northern Africa, Northwest Africa, or Northeast Africa, I should say, that were Christianized before Europe was Christianized. I mean, people just have very little view of history. And I'm not no deep history student. I've read bits and pieces that interest me.
Mm-hmm.
But these people, they need to grow up. It's a wide, wide world out there.
Mark, I'm a firm believer in math being the language of the universe. So if you had, magicians all of a sudden figuring out why situations happen the way that they do, which anyone who speaks the language of the universe in theory could, as mathematics continued to the our knowledge of math continued to grow and grow and grow. I can see how some people back then would see it's magic, but then all the critical thinkers would be like, wait, we're figuring this out. We're showing you how the world works, and you're just ignoring it. You're confused. You're angry. You're hateful. I wonder if religion had anything to play in that.
Yeah, and also it highlights why they believe it's valuable to harm education in this way, to control education like they do.
It all comes down to control, right? Yeah. If you're not going to trust me, the almighty religious leader of your tribe, because this other person figured out why stuff works, now I can't exert control over you. So we're heading off to break again. Thanks for calling in, everybody. We got a couple more callers coming in after the break, and we got a fabulous guest speaker that will be coming on to talk about their assembly district race. Right back after the break. We'll talk to you soon. This is Devil's Radio.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women sing wicked.
Hey, 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 hey. Welcome back to Devil's Radio on this lovely, lovely Friday afternoon. We got one more call that we want to hit quick before our fabulous guest speaker comes on. Chris from Janesville. What's up, Chris? How you doing today?
I'm great, you guys. I'll tell you what. I'm 48 years old, and I've never in my life received so many Republican mailers in my mailbox.
Yeah.
I could start, like, 8 bonfires with them. How do I, like, is there a way that you can say, hey, I don't want these, or is that just impossible nowadays?
I'm not sure. I guess the first part is being careful about who gets your address, right? This information is bought and sold on the free market, as it were. It's why if something is free and they want some information, you are, in fact, the product, right? They're going to sell that stuff.
You know what, though, Chris? If they want to waste their money, that war chest is massive. But if they want to waste their money sending stuff to you, I'm all for it.
I'll take it.
That's what I say, too. Like, send them all to me, man. I'll take all your mailers. It's just free Kindle, like you said.
It could be worth looking into the fine print. Thank you very much, Chris. You could look into the fine print there and see if there is some way to sort of, you know, if you get unwanted texts, you can often text stop.
You can opt out of them.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So it's worth checking. But yeah, thanks so much, Chris.
All right, moving on. We got a fabulous guest speaker today. He is actually my assembly district candidate running for the 24th assembly district out in Germantown, Grafton, Menominee Falls, a little bit of Mequon, the old Washington County area. We got Bob Tatterson here today. Bob, how you doing?
Hey, good evening. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, of course, of course. So, Bob, I hear you held a little press conference on Wednesday. Is that true?
Well, it was a little bit more than a little one. It was a big press conference. We brought together 10 assembly candidates to basically denounce some terrible actions that took place. So I don't know. Most people don't know about this, but, you know, on January 5th, 2021, 15 state legislators here in Wisconsin sent a letter to Mike Pence asking him not to do his constitutional duty. Mm-hmm. So we brought together all the opponents of those folks, and we put out a nice press release, and we gathered a handful of us and had a press conference and talked about this on Wednesday.
Yeah, I saw it on Twitter, actually. The coverage was excellent. So it was meant to coincide with the House Jan 6th committee. Obviously, Mother Nature had different ideas, but I read through the document you presented. This is fascinating. I mean, I didn't know about this myself. How many Wisconsin legislators signed on to this?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Fortunately, we didn't have a hurricane here on Wednesday, but yeah, they put off the January 6th hearings. We wanted to make sure that people had an opportunity to hear about what happened locally. But yeah, there were 15 state legislators, all Republicans. There were 14 representatives and one senator who signed on to a letter with some other legislators from Georgia and Pennsylvania and a couple other states urging, and I'll say, in fact, imploring, Vice President Pence not to do his constitutional duty on January 6th. And, you know, frankly, this is one of the reasons I'm running. I'm a first-time candidate, and I read about this, and as you mentioned, very few people heard about this January 5th letter because of what happened on January 6th, and I couldn't believe it. And I looked it up, and, you know, our state representatives, they take an oath to not only support the Wisconsin Constitution, but to support the U.S. Constitution. And how can you square that with asking the vice president to you know, break the law? This is crazy.
To ignore the will of the voters who you represent, allegedly.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, Pence even came out this year in a speech saying, you know, what could be more un-American than asking one person, and by that they meant him, to decide who was president? I mean, what could be more un-American? So it's really very sordid. And, you know, it's frankly unfortunate that more people don't know about it. When I, you know, talk to voters, very few of them know it happened. And I'll tell you, I talked to a lot of Republican voters. They hear about this and they're like, oh, wow, you know, Dan Knodel shouldn't have done that. And I'm hearing that from the other candidates as well, when they talk to their voters. You know, they're just shocked to hear that their incumbent Republican legislators signed on to this.
Oh, and, you know, add that on top of the fact that they haven't been in session since February. It sounds like a pretty sweet gig for some of these guys, right? You're not doing anything. You don't have to represent the people who elect you. You're superseding their will.
Yeah, you know, with, you know, the root sin here is gerrymandering. You've got a, you know, a party that doesn't need to work, and, you know, they gavel in and gavel out, and, you know, what legislation they put forward, you know, they put forward intentionally very hyper-partisan legislation that they know Governor Evers is not going to sign. In fact, I saw a video I found on the internet the other day that was a Zoom call among a bunch of Republicans, including some of our representatives, including my own District 24, Dan Knodel, where basically they said the plan, this was 2 years ago after Governor Evers got elected, the plan was, we're going to only pass hyper-partisan legislation, or I'm sorry, propose hyperpartisan legislation and vote on it, knowing that Evers will reject it. So basically they had no intent of, you know, trying to come to the middle at all to actually do any work for us, the taxpayers, the ones that are paying their $55,000 a year salaries to work a few a year. It's really ridiculous.
You know, I saw an article actually about Dan Knodel the other day. Obviously, that's my representative, so I was interested in this as well. He is the most authored far-right legislation in the state, something along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, I'm a first-time candidate. Why am I running? Well, I woke up in March and discovered that I was in a new district, and I started learning about Dan Knodel. I was previously in the 23rd, and now I'm being pushed in the 24th. And, you know, the more I read about this guy, you think that, you know, he's not really up to much, but he's actually busy cranking out bills. And in fact, yeah, there's an organization, it's called the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights. They're a nationwide group, IREHR, and they did a very quantitative study. They basically looked at every piece of anti-human rights legislation that was proposed by anyone, anywhere in the U.S., added them all up and cross-referenced it with all the authors and co-authors. And it turns out that Dan Knodel, 24, he was the most prolific sponsor of far-right anti-human rights legislation, not just in Wisconsin, in the entire country. He authored and co-authored 31 bills that were about, you know, COVID denying or anti-vax matters, voter suppression, anti-protest, anti-LGBTQIA, anti-public education. So he was flagged as the most prolific sponsor, most far-right sponsor of anti-human rights legislation.
In the state of Wisconsin, right? A state that prides itself on progressivism.
Right. And this is in the whole country. So, you know, he's obviously busy. He's obviously got a whole army of lobbyists lined up, ready to listen to him. He was the past caucus lead for Republicans. So, you know, he's out there on the lead. And, you know, I'll come back to gerrymandering. You know, he almost lost 2 years ago. And
4 years ago,
know,
as well.
He had a very tight win margin. Yeah, he won by 1.9%. And frankly, they turn around these new maps and they rewarded him. They gave him the largest percent or largest point increase on paper of any district. So he's picked up like 20 points of margin.
I saw that. It was what, like 3-24, plus 3-24?
Right.
Remarkable.
Right. Yeah. They've gone from plus 3-24. So he picked up the biggest win there in the gerrymandering game. So again, you know, subverting the rights of the voters. I mean, basically the decision has been made in the primaries. Now, you know, I'm not laying down and taking this. I'm working like heck out there to really communicate with everybody where I stand. And, you know, where I stand is basically what I'm hearing from the voters. I'm going out. I've been talking to people since May. I've been, you know, looking at the surveys and the polls that you see published, and I think I'm right where the will of the people are. And frankly, when I talk to independents and Republicans at their door, you know, if we're talking about any issue that really matters, at the end of the conversation, they say they vote for me. So for me, it's just a matter of getting that message out there and, you know, making sure people know where Canodal stands on a lot of these important issues.
We talk about local politics all the time, how important it is, right? Politics always starts locally. Well, especially with these new gerrymandered maps, all of our listeners, I challenge you, take a look at the 24th Assembly District from the last cycle, take a look at it from this cycle, you'll see what we're talking about. I mean, there's a legitimate shot at the Republicans controlling a supermajority to the point where the governor's race won't even matter. That's why these local races are so important. If you know anybody who's passionate, who's active, who wants to help, get out there. Even in these communities where you don't think you have like-minded individuals, you do.
Yeah, I would certainly say, if you get a chance, look at the press release we put out on Wednesday. I would definitely go out and support really heavily those 11 Democrats that are taking on 11 of those 15 who are running for re-election. I mean, if there's any reason for someone not to be re-elected, it's one of these guys that signed on to this January 5th letter.
Where can we find that press release, Bob?
Good question. I would start with Google. I think if you Google certainly
tool.
My name, if you go to bobtatterson.com, you can find a link. I was the leader of bringing the group together. But myself, Bob Tatterson, other folks here in the Southeast Wisconsin was Deborah Davis, Matt Brown, Dan Larson. So there's a whole group of us. There's 10 of us that we're standing behind this message of really calling out and denouncing these 15 for, you know, basically supporting, you know, this, we think, illegal act and really kindling some of the, ongoing election denial and violence that surrounds that. So we got to call these guys out and, you know, they got to be held accountable. No matter what anyone's political leaning, we got to send a message that these guys don't belong in office.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard back from any of these candidates? Did they have any response?
I've talked to the media, and I've been told by the media that there has been a response given to them by a few of these guys. In fact, I just talked to one of the other candidates, Dem candidates, today, and apparently her opponent spoke out. She spoke very strongly about basically saying that he should resign, given what he's done. So there's been some pushback there. But, the press is still – you know, the press isn't what it was 20, 30 years ago. Thank goodness we've got radio stations like this to get the message out. But, you know, it's working slowly through a lot of the smaller regional newspapers. So, you know, in the next few days, hopefully we'll see more responses. But I've heard that Dan Canodal's responded to these statements I've made, but I've not seen them yet. But I'm very eager to see how he tries to justify this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree completely. Hey, that's great work, though, Bob. Thanks for getting out there. Thanks for pointing out these issues. Like you said, and like I said, you know, I hadn't heard about that myself, and I'm involved in politics. That was news to me. So I think it's vital that these local candidates are able to get out there and kind of spread these messages to their constituents. Like, hey, I'm here to represent you. I want to represent you. You have any final thoughts today, Bob, while we got you here? Anything else you want to toss out there for our listeners back home?
Yeah, we got about 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, great. Yeah, I'll just say I'm a first-time candidate, and you know what brought me into this was again being gerrymandered into a district where there really wasn't any opponent that had raised their hand, and it's been really great. I mean, I've had an opportunity to talk to a huge number of people, and it's been I would certainly encourage everyone to flex their civil rights and stand up, and if not run for office like I did, certainly support candidates, because it's just so important that we have a dialogue going. And even though my incumbent candidate doesn't want to have a direct dialogue, and like others has ducked opportunities to participate in community forums or basically completely reject the League of Women Voters, which is just crazy to sit down and just have a community forum to discuss issues. It's just so important, to have candidates on the ballot and support them. So, if you're on the fence about, really getting active, I say, study up on the candidates, find a candidate that you feel alignment with and get in there and help them and knock on doors and make phone calls and support the democratic process.
You touched on something, Bob. The League of Women Voters, a third-party, impartial, nonpartisan organization, they tried to organize a forum between the two of you. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Representative Knodel just didn't respond to that.
Yeah, he didn't even say no. I mean, they emailed and called him numerous times. I mean, it's embarrassing. And you know, across the nation, I think the League of Women Voters have been doing these sorts of panels and debates since the 1930s, and they're very well respected. And you know, they just don't want to engage. And again, that's, you know, symptomatic of gerrymandering. They're basically giving the finger to the voters and saying, you know, we'll let the party bosses decide who makes it to the primary, and then we'll just coast through and not really listen to the voters. So we got to fix that. And, you know, let's start this election. Let's get more open-minded and democratic people like us in office, and we'll make progress.
You know, it's anecdotal, but I have not heard back from him either. As my rep, I have reached out so many times over the years. But thanks for coming on today, Bob. That was a great conversation. This is Devil's Radio, Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and Will and sometimes Evan. You can reach the station at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back after the break.
And my ranking member would always be bringing up white supremacy, which, you know, I condone.
What?
I mean, I condemn.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back. Devil's Radio. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian and occasionally Will and today Evan. If you want to give us a call, reach out. Any questions, concerns, anything you want to just throw in, add to the conversation. We'd always love to have you on 844-967-2789. We're going to go a little bit of a different route right now, something that's kind of personal to me and something that I'm kind of, let's say, hashtag fired up about. And that's, if you caught last night's NFL football game, the Bengals versus the Dolphins, first and foremost, that might have been the best matchup of, like, fresh uniforms I have ever seen. The Dolphins teal is always clean, but the Bengals all white. Sign me up for that. I kind of like that. Did you get a chance to catch that, Ev? Oh, I can't hear you, Ev.
Winning games.
There we go.
In sports ball, getting the goals.
I know how much you love that sports ball.
Sharp out there.
So anyways, Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa last week took a vicious, vicious fall to the back of the head, kind of snapped his head back, gets up, he's stumbling, he's clearly shaking off the cobwebs, then he falls onto the field, right? Well, what do we know? That's very, very, very likely a concussion.
Traumatic brain injury.
Some kind of traumatic brain injury.
He literally fell, like he collapsed on the field.
Yeah. No, wow. It was very difficult to watch. So he was not just, you know, taken off the field. Not only was he taken off the playing field, he left the field entirely, went back to the locker room.
Sure.
Well, he came back. He played in the second half.
Ooh.
A lot of people were very, very upset about that, including the NFL Players Union, which I believe either filed or requested to file. And what would be the phrase for that? Investigation, I guess, into the NFL's handling of this, and if this was handled properly by the Dolphins and their personal doctors.
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Yeah, well, the Dolphins staff allegedly okayed him. They have multiple doctors and neurocognitive doctors specialization whatever it would be, on staff. They all okayed him after the game. They had said it was a back and neck injury. It didn't look like a back and neck injury, but I'm not a doctor,
so I
had to trust them at that.
Back and neck injuries are like the injuries to worry about, right?
Yeah.
The complications and comorbidities thereof don't arise often until like later. It's why you're not supposed to manipulate and move people who have neck injuries.
But they don't have the stringent precautions that a concussion has, at least within the NFL system, so he was able to come back onto the field for Thursday Night Football last night.
Some of the saddest stories in sports and otherwise, just around, and boxing, I mean, a lot of really physical sports, just about how, just, man, the tragic lives of some of these men after they go hard for many, many years, you know?
I mean, it reminds me of the old Donald Driver commercial where you're getting into multiple car crashes every single time you step onto the field. Like, the human body is not designed for that. So last night, Tua gets sacked, and this one was vicious. Head snapped back harder than I've seen in years, and I've been a big-time fan of the NFL.
Sure.
I don't mean to, you know, step on Jason and Ben's toes or Packers Outright Opinion, because they do a fantastic job. So I'm going to refrain from talking about the Packers tonight and just talk about how angry this whole situation made me.
Yeah.
and he was just out cold. The thing where your hands kind of lock in place.
Oh no, the fencing posture.
The fencing posture.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness gracious! Like just so our listeners understand, like. That is a traumatic brain injury. Right?
Yes, severe,
there are responses
questionable that, brainstem injury. When you have that kind of response, that's not just a concussion.
That's why when someone falls and hits their head, even if they just literally tip over and they hit their head, that people die. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's exactly. Dangerous. Exactly. And so they brought out the stretcher. They weren't able to take the helmet off, just the face mask. Fully strapped him in, took him to the hospital. Why is this player even in the position for that injury to happen to him again 4 or 5 days later? That is absurd.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That is upsetting. Like you said, this stuff is hard to watch. And the more you know the saying, the more you know.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing it happen again would have just, it would have been gutting. Ugh.
Well, so Chris Nowinski on Twitter, he's a former WWE wrestler. And he's got a long, long history of concussions. He pointed this out before the game. He was like, if Tua plays today, first of all, that's grotesque. Second of all, the potential chance for re-injury is extremely high. And if he suffers another very serious traumatic brain injury, you're looking at long-term concussive problems.
There's liability
potentially
here.
Ending his career, potentially. You know, the NFL wants to act like they're, you know, it's all about the players. These mm-hmm. are our, you know, they're our employees. They're the ones making our revenue. But it's essentially bread and circus, just like the old Roman days, right? These are arenas. They're sending them back into the battlefield. They don't care.
We've seen how the NFL deals with this stuff. You know, decades and decades of players with really serious lifelong complications, early deaths,
mm-hmm.
you know, memory problems, dementia, all this stuff that has been linked to repeated traumatic injury.
And I kind of want to touch on a bigger point in regards to that, because like I said, I grew up, I loved football. I played it. If we saw flag football implemented at the professional level, that would be insanely cool. I know the NFL wants that in the Olympics because they know that they're likely going to cease to be an organization in the next 30, 40, 50 years. But mental health in general, right? Conservatives in particular love to blame every kind of problem we have in society on mental health. Well, here is a textbook example of legitimate mental problems that can be caused by severe traumatic injuries to your brain. Nobody cares. Nobody says a word. As long as you continue making that money, as long as the TV product is still excellent, as long as the advertisers can get their message out, nobody cares. Then you go on to, this even happened. 205 Republicans voted against school-based mental health services a couple days ago. 205. I thought, mental health concerns was the reason that we have such significant gun violence in the United States. Well, if it is, shouldn't we be doing something to fix that problem, or do you just not care about the problem? You know, you can't have it both ways.
Well, and it's a red herring for instead of talking about gun safety measures,
mm-hmm.
we can push it on to it's that individualized, it's them with the mental health problems.
Right.
It's not the culture that makes this stuff incredibly easy to get.
Mm-hmm. It's video games' fault, it's music's fault, it's... mental health, music and video games are the reason we have mental health problems, right? According to the vast majority of weird parents in the 1980s and 90s or Harry Potter or something corrupting our children, you know? But I can't understand the hypocrisy of you think this is the problem, mental health clearly is, so we're offering the solution, right? And then you're going to reject that solution anyways, as if admitting that the problem is either unsolvable or that you just don't care about it. Both situations are bad. I don't know what's worse, honestly.
Me neither.
And none of your constituents seem to care. I don't know if they're just not paying attention or if these specific issues don't matter to them. Like you said, maybe they're just using it as a crutch to justify why we don't talk about gun violence or issues related to guns.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's something that I would love to see the Democrats in particular kind of hammer on a little bit more going forward. Like, what is your solution then, conservatives? You think mental health is the problem, so we offered you this and you turned it down. Like, what do you think? What should we do to fix this? And they'll never have an answer for you because they don't want to fix anything. They
Bingo.
Just want to continue the status quo.
Bingo. They don't want to address it. That's why it's their problem.
Mm-hmm.
The person with the mental health issues, they're the problem, and it's simply not the case.
We had a lot of fun today, Evan. It's always great to see you. It's always great to be on Dueling Tangents. Devils Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM Madison. We're on the Shaw 101 FM and Waukesha 540 AM. Bulls Fall Radio, 98.9 FM, WXCO, 1230 AM, and locally grown radio, 97.5 FM, WFHR, 1320 AM, Wisconsin Rapids. I will be back on Monday.
I hope you all have a fabulous weekend.
Evan, it's always a party when we're in the office together. Am I right?
We'll see you soon, buddy.
Have a good night, everybody. Take it easy.